Eagles Entertainment.
With the 10th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by Life Brand. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and our position preview series continues here today as we talk through the defensive back class. We're going to start things off in Draft Buzz, talking about those DBs, the corners, and the safeties with Dane Brugler from The Athletic. We've got a ton of ground to cover. We're not going to waste much time. We're going to get right into it. After that, though, we've got Blueprint, where Michael Sean Dugar, who covers the Seattle Seahawks for The Athletic, he's going to join us just to talk about Pete Carroll and John Schneider, their draft philosophy. Why is that important for the Eagles? Well, it just so happens that the Seahawks, one of a couple teams with two first-round picks here in this upcoming NFL draft, both of them slotted just ahead of the Eagles. So it's very important to have an understanding. Where could the Seattle Seahawks be leaning here in this class? Where they pick at number five is a huge fulcrum, a huge tilting point here in the top 10 of this draft. So we'll talk through this all with Michael Sean here in our Blueprint segment. Then we've got an offensive line question from you at home in our draft mailbag. As always, be sure to head on over to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a question, if a mock draft, position rankings, whatever it is you've got, leave it there in the comment section there on Apple Podcasts. We will get to it here on an upcoming episode. Appreciate the support from everybody that has done that lately. That said, let's get into Draft Buzz here. It's time to talk through DBs with Dane Brugler.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, now for Draft Buzz, I've got Dane Brugler here to go through the defensive backs here in the 2023 NFL Draft. And we're going to start with the cornerback group. And if you look over the last decade, the average number of corners drafted every single year, 31.9. And it's been actually a huge jump these last two seasons, Dane. 39 last year in 2022, 38 the year before. Teams can't get enough corners. Everybody's looking for them. So we're going to talk through the cornerback position today. I want to ask you this, though. As we sit here in late March, over under that 10-year average of 31.9, it feels like you got to take the over, right?
I took the words right out of my mouth. I think you have to. You look at what teams are looking for. They want athletes. All these receivers going to the league, you need someone to cover them. So better to draft them than try to bid on them in free agency after the draft. So, draft and develop these guys. I think we'll take the over on the, what is it, 31 you said?
31.9, yeah.
Yeah, we'll take the over.
All right, well, let's go to our first category here. We're going to talk through man-to-man coverage. Everybody's looking for those guys that can line up and play man. At some point, even if you're a zone-heavy team, you do have to play some man-to-man coverage. So if you look on day one, day two of the draft, who's the guy that you feel best holds up in man-to-man?
Got to go Christian Gonzalez, Oregon. I've said this before, but diving into Gonzalez last summer is kind of like at the end of Avengers Endgame, like that final battle where everyone's coming back, that epic conclusion, Cap says assemble, all that stuff. I'm watching it and I'm like, all right, why is this comic book movie giving me goosebumps? It's kind of like that watching Gonzalez, like, okay, why is this Colorado corner giving me goosebumps? But that's how good he was watching him last summer. And sometimes it's as simple as he's tall, he's long, and he can run. And that's where you start with Gonzalez. And then everything else is why he's, I think, one of the best players in this draft. He can match vertically. His flying 20 was one of the best among, I think it was the best among all corners at the combine. I tweeted out how the corners and wide receivers did in the flying 20. Yep. And I think Gonzalez was the top corner. So he has man instincts. He's got ball skills. I think the ball skills improved throughout the year, which is what you really wanted to see from him. So I'm all the way in on Gonzalez, especially man-to-man.
To answer your previous question, the reason why it gives you goosebumps, you got to give a lot of love to Alan Silvestri, who orchestrated the track portals there during that scene. Dane, not to go too far down a rabbit hole, but when I'm watching film, my go-to is movie soundtracks. And so I'm well-versed in this realm.
So like, because I find this happens to me, but like, so when you watch that player, do you get like the sound, like it just, it's like, because like I'll have like, a movie on or something in the background as I'm watching film and working these guys. And then like, I'll go back to the report, 2 weeks later, and I'll immediately get an image or a noise in my mind that's from that movie. It's kind of I don't know. That's kind of weird, but
it's the Pavlovian response. You can't help but think of like there's something about Mary when you're watching like this random guard from Wisconsin. Yeah, I love it.
Bingo, exactly.
All right, so back on track here for me. A day three guy that I think best holds up in man to man. I'm gonna go with Travius Hodges-Tomlinson, the corner from TCU, and I do think that at the end of the day, the size is gonna knock him down. You know, he's gonna be shorter than any corner drafted in the last decade. Across the board, he's sub 180 pounds. He's got 29 inch arms. Just the size is just not friendly to Travius Hodges-Tomlinson. And he tested well and he performed well at the combine. I know Ella and I we thought he was maybe the best DB workout of that entire group. He was outstanding in the field drills. But I think when you look at Hodges-Tomlinson at that size, that's going to be a concern. And honestly, it also is a little bit of a concern in man-to-man coverage. And there's a reason why he's been flagged for as many penalties as well. I mean, he had 14 flags this past year, Dane. But I think when you look at the quickness in and out of breaks, he is silky smooth, very easy change of direction. He's got burst to close. He's got speed to carry receivers vertically down the field. I mentioned how clean the feet looked in the position drills as well out in Indianapolis. I just think that he's got a man-to-man skill set. He's played primarily on the outside. I think at that size, a lot of people are going to kind of pigeonhole him into the slot. The Hodges-Tomlinson, I think there's no question about his ability to kind of stick in a receiver's hip pocket.
Yeah, and that 14 number of the penalties, that to me,
that's big. Yeah,
that's the biggest number, probably even more so than the lack of size. But I mean, you like that aggressive nature. You know, he's a guy that he's never been big, so he's always had to try to overcome that, and he does it with his athleticism and his aggressiveness. And sometimes that will come back to bite him, but it's also why, you know, you think he has a shot even with that size. So I think for this category, man to man, and we're talking about day three players for a reason, he's going to go later, but he definitely has a shot because of that athleticism and the way he likes to stay attached to receivers tight in coverage.
All right, well, let's go to zone coverage here. Who's got the best instincts, the best route awareness in zone coverage? I'll go with a day one, day two option here. And I'm going to go with a corner that was in a lot of round one mock drafts in the fall. And then he tore his ACL. I think it was like late October or mid-November. And that's the corner from Syracuse, Garrett Williams. And I'm going to be honest, Dane, like this kid is one of my favorite tapes of all the cornerbacks in this class. I really, really enjoyed watching Garrett Williams on tape. 5'10", 192 pounds out in Indianapolis at the combine. I thought he made some great plays in zone over the course of this season. He plays really well with his eyes on the quarterback. He can high point and finish. He made some outstanding plays on the ball down the field in zone. Zero penalties the last 2 years. And he also just plays with a competitive edge. And these are all things when you talk about like the route awareness, the competitiveness and the ball skills. Like, I don't know like how well you need to test to be like an outstanding man car zone corner. But I actually think Williams would have tested pretty well. I actually kind of really liked his athleticism on tape. But I thought he had a really good knack for playing in zone as well. I don't think you and I have ever talked about Williams. I'm a big, big fan, though.
Yeah, I agree. I'm pretty sure he was in my top 50 back in August. He just got in there. I mean, I gave him a second round grade over the summer. Really like his footwork at the top of routes. He has a really good understanding of what's going on out there. It'll be interesting with this injury, how far he falls.
Yeah.
Are we talking fourth round? Are we talking, it's hard to guess that, especially at corner where, yep. It's a different ball game. So yeah, it'll be interesting for Williams, but I think, if fully healthy, we would definitely be talking about him as somewhere in the top 75, maybe even somewhere top 50. For my guy, a day three option, I went with Riley Moss, the Iowa corner. Nice. And he's got speed. He's a springy athlete. But I really like his ability to read the route, read the receiver, break on throws without hesitation. I think it's why he had 11 interceptions, 3 pick sixes. He's a guy that can turn and run and press. I think he'd be fine. You know, he'd play in man, but I like him best in zone where he can really tighten those passing lanes. And he's the type of guy that he gets offended when there's a completion on his watch. So he's locked in and does a nice job baiting from zone. So Riley Moss is one of those guys. Probably won't go until, somewhere in that fourth, fifth round range. Yep. But it definitely stick if he's in the right situation.
He's a guy, honestly, that could have fit into this category as well. The next one we're going to do, the best ball skills at corner in this draft. Who's the best when it comes to just purely playing the ball in the air, finishing at the catch point? I'll let you kick it off with our day one or day two option.
I mean, there's a lot of different guys we could go with here. So, but I have to go Emmanuel Forbes, Mississippi State, right? Yeah. All 166 pounds of them. The tape is, it's a masterclass of spatial relationships. He spent 3 years in college and led Mississippi State in passes defended and interceptions each of those 3 years. Plays on the balls of his feet. He can stay balanced. He reacts to anything. He freelances, but I think he does it responsibly. That was my issue with him watching him during the year. He's like, you know, freelancing all the time. And it really bothered me, but you know what? He does it responsibly. And you know, will you get in trouble sometimes? Sure. But I think there's an art to it and an instinctive feel. And he shows that. So now ball skills are much more than just interceptions, but with an FBS record, 6 pick sixes, I got to give the edge to Forbes here.
I like it. I think that your argument is sound for him there. I think when you talk about just the production, it kind of speaks for itself with Emmanuel Forbes. That 6 pick 6 number is going to be big. Is it bigger than the 166 in terms of the pounds? I think that will be important to watch. For me, I'm going to go day three, and I'm going to go like deep sleeper. I'm going to go non-combine invite here, Dane. You talk about 166 pounds. Tywan Mullen, the corner from Indiana, is 5'7.5", I think, and he's 8 pounds heavier than Forbes. He's still light at 174 pounds, but I think when you look at Tywan Mullen, and I've watched him here over the last couple of years with the Hoosiers, and one thing that constantly stands out to me about him, he is an excellent ball tracker and can finish as well as anybody. He's been large, very, very productive over the course of his career as a starter. 32 starts, really stepped on campus as a true freshman back in 2019 and stepped right in, started 8 games for that defense. And this was a consensus freshman All-American back then. And you kind of thought, okay, like, could this guy turn into a future first-round pick? It didn't quite work out that way. Obviously didn't get invited to the combine. His brother Trayvon's been in the league for the last few years. His cousin on his mom's side is Lamar Jackson, an All-Pro, so you like the bloodlines here. But I think when you look at Tywan Mullen, his ability to finish on the football down the field, attacking downhill, everything across the board, like that is one thing that really stands out to me about his game. I do like Tywan Mullen.
Did you see his pro day numbers?
I saw some, but not all.
All right, well, here's straight from a team. This is what they have. He was 5.084, so 5'8.5", 181. Small. 40 was 4.40, so pretty good. 32 vert, 10 even broad, 4.41 shuttle, 7.003 cone, 30 3/8 for the arm, 19 reps on the bench. So good speed, really good speed.
4.4 is good, but those other numbers aren't great. No.
They're average, maybe slightly below for some of them, but the 4.40 is definitely a good number. And I mean, we know it's a stopwatch position. So this 40 will at least help him a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good call. Tywan Mullen, I think it's an interesting player just to keep in mind. Let's go next one here. Best playing downhill. I think I'm a big proponent. You have to tackle in today's game at this position. Who's the best corner playing downhill? I'm going to go with a day one or day two pick. Let's talk through Kaylee Ringo, the corner from Georgia. He's been in most mock drafts, really going back to the spring, just under 6'2", 207 pounds. He's got great size from a height weight standpoint. 4.36 in the 40-yard dash. We expected this. We expected him to be a height weight speed guy. But one of the things I love most about him is that he's a very sound, violent tackler. I'd like to see him get off blocks a little bit a higher rate, especially considering his frame. But this guy has the demeanor to come downhill and play with ferocity. I like Kaylee Ringo from that standpoint. That's why I went with him here in this category. Tell me about what you think about Ringo here, and then you can transition into your day three pick.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. I mean, Ringo is a big physical player. He does his best work coming downhill as opposed to trying to turn, find the football down the field. So I like him a lot downhill. He's got the size for it. He's got the drive and speed for it. I mean, that's why we've heard some people suggest maybe he'd be better at safety. So, you know, I think that makes sense here. For my day three option, I went with Mekhi Blackman from USC. Nice. He's a guy who is pretty light, but he's a secure tackler. He was only 179 pounds at the combine, but I think coaches are really going to like, you know, they turn on the tape and they really study this guy, really going to like the toughness, mental, physical toughness that he shows. And you definitely see that in the run game. He was among the team leaders last year with 66 tackles. That's a high number for a corner, and good luck finding misses. I mean, I did 7 or 8 of his tapes, and I can think of one against Utah That was about it. So, I mean, he's a guy, he'll settle his feet, comes to balance, he wraps, he finishes. I think Blackman's a good player, and that shows in coverage and against the run.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching him. He's a fun player. You mentioned he's played for a couple different schemes now, starting at Colorado and then moving over to USC. A really competitive player, and that's one of the that was my one big thing that I took away from studying his tape. So I'm glad you brought him up. Let's go to our next category here. Favorite player comparison. I'll let you kick it off.
So I'm going with Clark Phillips, the Utah corner, with Mike Hilton, corner for the Bengals. Both are 5'9". That's what they were coming out of college, verified 5'9", right around 180 pounds. They both ran in the 4.5s. So not great height, not great speed, but they both know how to play football. And they both had the mentality needed for playing on an island, especially in the slot, playing at against NFL athletes. And I mean, I could have easily said Phillips for the best ball skills category. He finds the ball more often than the ball finds him. And I think he's going to be drafted much lower than he should just because of that size, just like Hilton, who was undrafted, but has certainly outplayed that. So I think there's certainly a lot of parallels here between the two players.
Yeah. Real quickly, just because of the size and speed, how far do you think he gets knocked for that in this class?
Well, I mean, where Asante Samuel went, what, late second or mid second?
Oh, I think it was a little bit later than that, I think. Oh, yes, he was like late second to the Chargers.
Yeah, I think right, you know, that late second, early third, probably like right around like a similar range for him. Cause I mean, I didn't think he was going to run great. I thought he'd run maybe a little, I thought like 4.47, 4.48, but he was in the 4.5s. That'll certainly ding him a little bit. And then it's just a loaded class of corners. You know, it's not like teams are going to be struggling to find corners worthy to take in that day two range, and that'll hurt him a little bit as well. But I have no doubt he's going to, you know, knock it out of the park with the interviews. The tape is good. Mm-hmm. So I still have a hard time believing he'll fall out of the top 60, but wouldn't be surprised if it happened.
He's one of those guys where, you know, when he didn't time well, there are teams that were like secretly like very happy because they didn't get him a little bit later because his tape is really, really good. It's just going to be the height, weight, speed deal with him. Let's go to mine where it's kind of the opposite. Darius Rush from South Carolina, a shade under 6'2". He's got ridiculous length. He's just got great size across the board. He runs 4.36. I know he timed well in the GPS stuff down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl as well. From a pure trait standpoint, like height, weight, speed, Darius Rush has everything you're looking for. He backed it up with production this year, 2 picks and 7 PBUs. He was the Americans cornerback of the week down at the Senior Bowl. So he had a good week of practice down there. He really reminds me on film of Akello Witherspoon when he was at Colorado. And Witherspoon, I think, was very similar from a height, weight, speed standpoint. He had that last big year of production. Then there was just a lot of momentum rolling his way going into the pre-draft process. Witherspoon ended up being a third-round pick. And he's been kind of like a number, anywhere from like a number two to a number four corner over the course of his career in the NFL. I think that could be a fine path for Darius Rush. And I think at the end of the day, and I think you look at their skill set, you look at the body type, you look at the narratives, I think that Darius Rush and Akello Witherspoon, that kind of matches.
I think it does. I really liked Witherspoon coming out, and I really like Rush coming out this year. So, you know, if both end up, we knew Witherspoon was a third rounder, but if Rush ends up in a third round as well, that wouldn't be a surprise when you talk about the size, the speed, just the way they're ascending at the right time. You feel like you like what they put on tape, but you feel like there's more there too. So, you know, the traits are what you're betting on, and Darius Rush definitely has those traits.
Dane, who's someone you're surprised is not getting more love?
Cameron Mitchell, Northwestern corner. I feel like he's kind of got lost in the mix. Came out early as a junior. There just aren't a lot of holes in his game. He's got average size. He's right around 5'11", 190 pounds. But good speed. I thought he looked good at his pro day. Saw some tape from that. I know I'm going to be higher on him probably than most others, but I'm okay with that because I'm going to trust the tape on Cam Mitchell and feel pretty confident that he's going to make me look smart 2-3 years from now.
I'm going to go with Eli Ricks from Alabama. It's very rare that an Alabama corner goes unheralded in the pre-draft process, especially one who's like 6'2 with 32 1/4 inch arms. He was an All-American as a freshman, not a freshman All-American. He was a third team All-American at LSU as a true freshman playing opposite Derek Stingley Jr. He ended up transferring to Alabama this past offseason. The production has not really been there over the last 2 years. He's got 1 pick and 5 PBUs in the last 2 seasons. So you are kind of betting on the come here with Eli Ricks, but dude, when you watch him play, and he only had a handful of starts this year for the Tide, he's excellent in press coverage. He's really competitive. His reaction quickness at the top of routes is really impressive. I mentioned the ball production fell off, but like the flashes are really, really good playing the ball in the air. He'll deliver huge hits playing downhill. He can get a little bit more consistent there, but just a very competitive, aggressive corner that looks the part. Those are tough to come by. Those guys don't grow on trees at 6'2" with the 32-inch arms.
Think about if these guys were able to enter the draft after the 2020 season.
Yeah.
Ricks would have been a first rounder. Kayshon Boutte would have been a first rounder.
Yeah, right.
Those guys were just freshmen, just lighting it up. And then they both kind of slipped the last 2 years for multiple reasons. But Ricks is a guy that it'd be interesting to watch his NFL career to see if he can make teams look foolish for passing on him. Because I think you're right. I think there's a good chance he falls. Maybe even out of the top 100, He's not a lock to go in the first 2 days. So yeah, that'll be interesting to watch.
The best players we didn't mention, there's a handful of like first round picks potentially. There's just a bunch of names at corner. Pick one: Devin Witherspoon, Joey Porter Jr., Cam Smith, DJ Turner, Julius Brent, Deontay Banks. There's a bunch of other names, obviously, at corner.
Go at the top. My second corner is Devin Witherspoon, a guy that you just you watched him over the summer. You're like, okay, this is a good player. And then you watch more and more. You're like, no, he's a great player. Like this guy, he's not the biggest. You worry about that 181 number, his weight. He's not a guy that's ever going to be able to carry much more than that. But the aggressiveness that he plays with, he hits you like he's 215 pounds. And he's a guy that has. He embraces the challenge of man-to-man. He's got the instincts for it. He's got the competitive chops to do it. He's a good athlete, ball skills. So, I think he needs to walk the fine line of being aggressive without, making early contact, drawing flags. But I'll bet on that cover athleticism, the ball skills, the toughness. It's no wonder why we're talking about Devin Witherspoon as a potential top 15 pick.
I'll go Joey Porter Jr. here from Penn State. And I think one of the big knocks you'll hear from him is, he only had one pick in his entire career. And yes, that's a tough number to overcome. I will say is that he had a forced incompletion percentage, which is that's a pretty sticky number when you look at PFF metrics going from college to the NFL. And it's a pretty good predictor in terms of guys that have a knack for being able to play the ball in the air. He had a forced incompletion percentage of 38.2 this year. That's higher than any corner drafted in the last decade, really since PFF has been charting college players, higher than any corner drafted in their final season of play. So I think when you look at Joey Porter Jr., yeah, like the pick production was not there, but he can play the ball in the air. He knows how to be able to get the ball on the ground and disrupt at the catch point. He uses those 34-inch arms well. He's got to cut the flags down. That was an issue last year in 2021. Could have been an issue. He only got flagged three times this past year, and in the games I watched, it could have been a little bit more. But I think when you look at Joey Porter Jr., there is plenty to like there. And I do like the physicality on film as well. A bunch of other corners. We'll try and hit some more with Ben down the line here this week as well. Let's go now to the safety spot, Dane, where over the last 10 years, the average number of safeties drafted every spring, 20.4, just 17 last year, hit 20 on the nose back in 2021. So when you look at this class, it's too little or too many? Are we hitting over under here with 20.4 safeties drafted?
That's a good number, 20.
Yeah, it's a good number.
I'll take the slight over. I'll say it's 21 or 22, but it wouldn't surprise me. I think it'd go either way. Could be lower than that. I mean, something has to give, the under with one of these positions. And it could end up being safety. It's a solid but unspectacular group of safeties this year.
Yeah, it's a someone actually asked me about that today too, just how I felt about the safety class. And I think it's a solid group overall. And we'll start with honestly the top name of pretty much everybody's board. Our first category, best deep safety. Who's the rangiest center fielder, the best top-down run defender in this group? Who's just the best at playing from depth? And as a day one, day two option, I want to talk about Brian Branch. Even though Branch spent a lot of time in the slot for Alabama as that star in the middle of the defense, there were plenty of reps of him playing from depth and being really good at it. 5'11 and a half, 190 pounds. He's built more like a slot corner than he is as a safety. But we've seen plenty of guys come into the league. Buda Baker comes to mind without really putting too much thought into it, that come in with that smaller frame, that have the ability to be a three-down player on defense. And this is a guy that can match tight ends. He reads things really well from the deep part of the field. He's got really clean feet in his pedal, and he can close and finish. He's a violent striker, and he's a really good tackler. Coming downhill, he runs the alley really well. He's an active blitzer from depth. He's just an overall, just a really competitive football player. Dane, I know you love Brian Branch as well, so I'm kind of preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to, even though he didn't have the best combine, with the 40, and, you know, the size isn't ideally what you want, but just try, when you watch his tape, try not liking him. I mean, he's a really good player. So I'll talk more about him with a later category. Okay. I think the options really thinned out on day three. Not a ton of, I think, guys that you look at and say, oh yeah, he's great as that rangy deep safety, but I'll go with Brandon Hill from Pitt. Not big. He's 5'10", 193 pounds. You wish the ball production was better.
Yep.
Only two pass breakups, in 12 games this past year, but the strength of his game on the field is range, pure speed, where he'll get where he's going pretty quickly. So he led all safeties in the 40-yard dash, 4.43. There are holes in his game, like I said, but when you're talking about this day three bucket, it's hard to find some of these guys, but I think Hill's one of them that has range, has downhill speed. No questions about that for him.
Best man-to-man coverage upside. Who offers the most just purely as a matchup guy on the back end at the safety position? If you look day one, day two, who's a name that sticks out to you?
Quan Martin from Illinois is one of my favorite players in the draft. Super explosive. And if you need any evidence, just look at what he did at the combine. 44 inches in the vert, ran a 4.46 in the 40. The positional workouts were great. He played corner when he got there. He played safety at Illinois. But he looked at his best when Ryan Walters, the former DC, who's now the head coach at Purdue, when he got there 2 years ago, they moved him to more of a nickel player. And that's where he just really thrived. He got better and better each game, I thought. He needs to do a little bit better job down the field in terms of finishing. He's what I call a 90-10 player. The first 90%, I think it looks great. It's the final 10% where I think he needs to clean it up a little bit. And so, but we're talking about a day two pick here. I'm very happy with that 90%. So with the encouraging things I saw on tape, with the way he tested, I believe he's a top 100 player and a guy that I think will end up being a very useful player for a team looking for that nickel position.
Yeah, I think he had one of the best positional workouts of all the DBs out in Indianapolis. Was really, really impressive. I mean, he moves like a corner for sure. And so that position versatility certainly stands out. And honestly, I could say the same for my pick here for day three. And that's Jammie Robinson from Florida State. Undersized at the safety spot, under 5'11", 191 pounds, under 30 inch arms. He's going to get knocked from a size standpoint. But, similar to like CJ Gardner-Johnson when CJ was coming out of Florida, I think when you look at Jammie, he's got that free safety nickel flexibility. He's been a productive player over the course of his career, first team all conference each of the past two seasons with the Seminoles. And I think when you look at his ability to play in the slot, which is that he was used in that way very often over the course of his college career, his route instincts show up in man-to-man coverage. He breaks on things fast. And so, when you see that quickness in and out of breaks, you see that reaction quickness to get him to that point. He's an impressive player. And he's another guy. When we talked about this with like Clark Phillips, we talked about this with Hodges Tomlinson, like at that size, like he ran 4.59. His jumps were underwhelming. Like those numbers are not going to be helpful for Jammie Robinson. I think that's why ultimately you're talking about him on early day three, as opposed to like midway late day two. But I think the film kind of speaks for itself. I think he can play man to man in the NFL.
And I mean, let's be honest, is his profile that much different than like a Jalen Petrie last year? I mean, Petrie's under 200 pounds. I don't think Petrie ever ran the 40, so like he might've had his pro day. I can't remember. He didn't have the combine. I remember that. Yep. So, I don't think he's too far from a Jalen Petrie, who, went the second round and has been a really good player as a top 40 pick. So, but I do agree with you. I think there's a good chance he'll be dinged and might not go in the top 100.
All right, let's go to our next category here. Our best down close to the line of scrimmage, whether you want to look at it as like a run defender or just being comfortable playing close to the line in traffic. I'll start on day one, day two. I'm going to go with a guy that I was really high on coming into the year. And he and the rest of this Aggies team had a little bit of a down season here in 2022. And that's Antonio Johnson from Texas A&M. 6'2", 198 pounds, well-built kid. I mean, he certainly looks the part at the safety position. And honestly, he's another guy who played often in the slot for that defense. And so you get a chance to really get a feel for his position versatility. He's not going to be a slot corner in the NFL. I think we talked about that with Branch or Jamie Robinson, Quan Martin, like to have that flexibility. I don't think he's going to be an every down player. He could be a tight end matchup guy for certain. I think he could find that role, which I think you could kind of pigeonhole into this category. But I just like him being down close to the line of scrimmage. He's a really good blitzer. He had more missed tackles than I would have liked to see here this year, but a very competitive, willing tackler. He's not afraid to mix it up with bigger tight ends or offensive linemen pulling in his direction. I think you look at Antonio Johnson with his size and with his tenacity. This is a guy I like playing close to the line of scrimmage. I think he's kind of what you're looking for in today's strong safety from a theoretical like skill set standpoint.
I think that makes sense. I was a little surprised by he had the lowest bench press number at the combine.
Interesting.
With only 8, that surprised me. But I agree with you. I think like this isn't an apples to apples comparison, but stylistically, like the way they want to play, like a Jamal Adams type, where you want him near the line of scrimmage. I think the zone instincts, the willingness to drop the hammer, that's what fits him best. So yeah, what do you think the draft range is for Antonio Johnson, who is coming off a not great season, tested pretty good. Okay. He's in the low 4.5s. Where do you feel like his draft range is right now?
I think for those that did not watch his sophomore stuff and only watched the most recent stuff, my guess is you're looking at him as more of a day 3 guy. I think if you watched his sophomore, and this is just me, if you watched his sophomore tape and you came into the season with that in mind, that might kind of change the anchoring point there a little bit, and you might be a little bit more palatable there on day 2. I think at the end of the day, he's probably more of a late day 2 type of option, but it would not shock me at all if he did fall to day 3.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. I mean, it's one pass defensed all year. Yeah. You just didn't make enough plays in coverage that if you're going to sell me, if we're in a war room and I'm a GM and you're going to sell me on Antonio Johnson. Okay. Like how is he in coverage? Show me the plays on tape where he's making plays on the ball. And it's like, it's hard to do that. But I do agree with you when you factor in his sophomore stuff or 2021 stuff, you start to see a better picture. So it really makes for a conflicting draft projection at this point.
Well, let's go to your day 3 option. Who do you think?
I'm going to go with Sidney Brown, Illinois. A lot of Illinois DBs to talk about. Yep. He's a guy that's football smart and does really well near the line of scrimmage. He can diagnose without wasting steps, fills with purpose and control as he tries to get around blocks and makes plays at the ball carrier. I think he leverages well as a run defender. He's got the physicality. He understands angles. And he's a guy that can, if he's going to match up with tight ends, he can go make plays near the line of scrimmage in coverage. So Sidney Brown, he's grown on me at the Senior Bowl at the Combine. Based just on the tape, I didn't necessarily love him. I still think he's more of a early day 3 guy, not a top 100 guy. But, I think he's certainly helped himself with what he's done during the pre-draft process.
Yeah, to me, like you mentioned Jalen Petrie earlier, and I feel like Sidney Brown can play that kind of, or they were used differently in college, right? Petrie and that Baylor defense was used a little bit more uniquely than I think with Sidney Brown, who was much more of a traditional kind of a boundary safety for the Illini. But I think when you look at Brown, like he can be that kind of player in the NFL. He's kind of got that same level of tenacity, that nose for the football. They're built kind of similarly, so that would not shock me whatsoever. Most instinctive. This is a guy that, no matter where they line up, how they're used, this player's just got the fastest processor. He sees things the clearest. How do you view the most instinctive safety here on day 1 or day 2?
I'll go with Chris Smith, Georgia safety. Nice. For this one. Rangy, I think he's zone instinctive, plays with anticipation. He's got not just awareness, but peripheral awareness. He's got such a good idea of what's going on the full field. Then he has a closing burst. That really helps his range so he can jump routes. And, he's just one of those guys that right place, right time. And that's usually not a coincidence. And so if you're looking for that center fielder type, the read to react from depth, opportunistic with the ball skills, I think that's Christopher Smith.
Do you think the 4.62 is going to hurt him too much at 192?
I was going to say, when you're talking about sub 200 pounds and you don't run a blazing 40, there's no doubt. But again, I think, you know, we talked about this with which corner?
Clark Phillips.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like there's some teams doing fist bumps when they saw that. Thinking, oh, well, maybe we're in the late third. Maybe we get him or maybe even in the fourth. You know, safeties are hard to peg. But, yeah, that number is not going to make him go higher than we thought. That's for sure.
A guy I feel like has a similar-ish kind of profile in terms of like, all right, a little slightly undersized, tested a little bit better, but both these guys were fifth-year seniors, have been productive whenever they've been in the lineup, and that's Shamari Connor from Virginia Tech. 6'2", 202. He ran a little bit better. He ran in the low 4.5s out in Indianapolis. Connor's got a little bit more proven positional versatility as well. He's been a full-time slot corner at times throughout his career. He's played a ton of ball. He's got 48 starts in his career. He's got over 600 special team snaps as well. A very projectable role moving forward for Shamari Connor. One of the things that stood out to me about him, not only like how quickly he saw things and was able to react, I think he's a very good reactionary athlete, but also like really good angles, whether it's pass game or run game. He's just always got a really good feel for the way to attack the football downhill, whether he's again attacking from depth as a run defender, going to attack in the alley, or whether he's attacking the ball sideline to sideline in the air. I just feel like Shamari Connor for Virginia Tech, he's got a good feel for being able to play defensive back.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I mean, I think he's more well liked by teams than most people on the outside. So I think it not like saying top 50 or anything, but if you went third round, fourth round, somewhere in those middle rounds, that wouldn't be a surprise.
All right, well, let's get to our player comp here. We're wrapping things up with a safety spot. Who's your favorite player comparison?
I went with Brian Branch, compared him to Javon Holland, both, a tad undersized, more so Branch than Holland, but good athletes. The main thing here is if you want anticipation, you want instincts, you want ball skills, you want position flex, as a nickel or a safety, I think both these guys, they bring that. So it's not a perfect apples to apples comparison, but I think that when you're talking about what roles they're going to fill and what the strengths of their game are, I think there are definitely some parallels between the two.
Yeah, actually, I made that comparison last week on the show, talking with Ben about the Minnesota Vikings selecting Brian Branch. Could Brian Flores see him as his Javon Holland from Oregon? He was very, very similar. So we're on the same page there. Who's someone we're surprised is not getting a little bit more love? I've got a good one, but I'll let you go first here.
I'm going to go with Jason Taylor from Oklahoma State.
I just watched him for the first time today.
And what'd you think?
He's a solid player. He checks a lot. He's not gonna. I actually kind of liked him. I think that, you know, I don't know that his film is quite the same as his testing. Like, I didn't see like a real top end athlete. But I saw a guy that checked a lot of boxes. To me, like, plays the ball extremely well in the air. I think that was the number one thing that stood out to me.
Six
picks. And just like you watch him play the ball in the air, like, you go back and watch those picks. Really, really impressive. But I'm just gonna get your thoughts.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that if you ask him to cover man-to-man, he's going to have some missteps. But I think, he has some athletic range, as a split safety. He can, if he's playing the post or playing the deep half, I really like his eyes. I think he can read from depth. He can read, track the football. He can run the alley. I think he takes fast angles to the ball carrier. Needs to be a little more controlled with his finish. But, I think there's some things here. Does he need to clean up some in some areas? Yeah, definitely. But I see instincts. I see urgency to the football. So a guy that can be a post safety in the NFL. And I think at worst, you're talking about a core special teamer.
Yeah, he definitely can do that for sure. I mean, he's done that over the course of his career, and that's an area I think he could step in right now, and you feel pretty good about his ability to be a core four special teams player. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, I can project right now he could be a number four safety rolling out of bed. That's a valuable commodity, certainly moving to the NFL. Dude, why is there not more love for Javarius Owens from Houston? 6 foot. 32-inch arms, 195 pounds is a little slight. He's built more like a corner than as a safety. But he moves like a corner. This is a guy that outstanding range, explosive athlete. He didn't really test out in Indianapolis. He did the jumps, but didn't run, did the position workout and was excellent. And I was like, okay, like I'm excited to just go back and watch this guy on tape. And that athleticism shows up. He's got excellent ball production and his ability to finish on the ball flashes on tape. He's got matchup ability in the slot versus wide receivers and even tight ends. His cornerback experience comes in handy there. He's got good range on the back end, a very active run defender as well. He missed a bunch of tackles. That's a big thing. And that's the one thing I'm worried about with him moving to the NFL, but he's a willing run defender. His insertion points in his ankles or in his angles are always really good. And it also like clearly like the traffic cop defensively, he's always getting guys lined up before the snap as well. He was a productive player at junior college, went to Houston and became a special teamer early and then stepped into the starting lineup the last two seasons. I really like Javarius Owens. Like to me, like this guy looks like a starting safety all day. And if he doesn't hit, then I feel really good that he's going to be a quality special teamer.
Yeah. He had a couple block kick or block punts in college. Yeah. He's a guy that I was surprised how much he did show up in the run game. I mean, he was one of the leading tacklers for that team. A guy that it doesn't look like, I mean, because like you said, he's a little bit lighter than you want your safety to be. But he goes out there with authority and he plays. So I'm an Owens fan as well. I think if you're talking about day three players, he's one of those guys along with Taylor that I'm circling and saying, yeah, we'll be a better football team if we draft him.
All right, so we got a handful of safeties we did not mention here in this discussion. A couple of them, I think, have a good chance of going like in the meat of day two here. So Brandon Joseph from Notre Dame, the transfer from Northwestern, was really productive a couple of years ago. He's coming out of Notre Dame. Jordan Battle from Alabama, we did not mention. Jair Brown from Penn State. Ronnie Hickman, Ohio State. A couple of the Florida kids, Rashad Torrance and Trey Dean. So, Dana, if you had to pick one guy from that group to further break down, who would you pick and why?
I definitely want to be Joseph. I don't see it with him. I will go with Jair Brown, who he was in my top 100 back in February. He was like 68 around there. I'm a big fan of Jair Brown. He didn't test great, but he tested about what I thought, you know, mid 4.6s. But you know, he's a guy that, you know, he's always around the football. 10 interceptions the last 2 years. So he's a guy that will always be around the football. I think he plays pretty well as an open field tackler, really physical, in coverage against tight ends. He's got just enough range so he can make plays, on the ball, even outside the numbers. And he's, you know, you're looking for that energetic tone setter. That's what this guy is. So, he'll also play on punt coverage. He had a forced fumble on punt coverage, as a senior this past year. He kind of filled a lot of the roles that, Jaquan Brisker had the year before, before he was a second round pick of the Bears last year. So he's a guy that's just, and he talked to Manny Diaz. It was the defensive coordinator of Penn State. He raves about him, you know, calls him, someone that he was just really happy he got to coach because of the way he plays. So I'm a fan of Brown. And even though he didn't test great, I still think, you know, somewhere in the top 100 picks, he's worthy of a pick and, is going to be a good NFL player.
Yeah, it's an interesting story from that standpoint when you talk about like there was a lot of buzz coming into the combine with him and then just did not test well. And so I feel like that's cooled off a little bit. One guy I want to bring up, Jordan Battle from Alabama, 6'1", 209 pounds. He was in a lot of mock drafts the last 2 years. Remember, he was slated to come out after the 2021 season and went back for another year. I think when you look at Battle, he's played a ton of football, over 3,000 snaps played over the course of his career. He just hasn't been very productive. Like he's been consistently like in the statute, but just like a half a TFL this year, one TFL last year, one pick this year. He had three last year, but like you look at the overall body work from a production standpoint, not there, but this guy just like checks so many boxes. And that's what I kind of like about Jordan Battle. There's nothing like overly sexy about his game. He's a solid athlete. He's not like a powerful striker, but he's a really pretty reliable tackler. He reads routes really well in both man and zone, plays well from depth. He's been a great special teams player over the course of his career. Just over 650 snaps on special teams. So I think this is a guy that you feel really good about like the high floor, high ceiling conversation. You feel good about Jordan Battle's floor. It's a matter of like what the ceiling is that we're talking about at the end of the day, but I like him as a football player.
Yeah, and he's another one that's kind of tough to figure out where he's going to be drafted because, you know, I think it's a debate along the lines of what you're saying about, do you want more of a playmaker or do you want a guy that's just, you know, he's solid in a lot of areas. Yeah. And, you know, you feel like you can trust him. He's not going to hurt you. But again, he's not going to make many plays. So, you know, where do you feel comfortable drafting a guy like that? Some teams won't be interested at all. Other teams will be, you know, believe in that high floor. So, you know, does he go third round? Does he fall out of the top 100? Yeah, that'll be an interesting one to watch with Battle.
Yeah, well, it's a really interesting name, a bunch of names. I think I like Brandon Joseph a little bit more than you do out of Notre Dame, but there's a few names in the safety class. I do think it's a solid class overall. After kind of going through it with you, all these guys were like, yeah, like this guy can play. It's a good group overall for the safety position.
It's just not a group that, you know, screams top 50, top 60 picks, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's where the hang up is okay, Brian Branch, and then it's like, okay, when's the next safety going to go? And, you know, but I do think that, yeah, between rounds 3 and 6, you're going to feel pretty good about the safeties that you have to pick from.
Real quick before I cut you loose, how's the beast coming? I know you're a couple weeks away. I know all of our listeners are excited to dive in once it's out.
It's a lot of not much sleep. I'll just say that. If I sound exhausted, it's because I am. If I get 4 hours of sleep, you know, this time of year, it's I'm doing great. But now it's a matter of going through all the pro day data and trying to, you know, mine for those gems. I got phone calls tonight with a lot of different prospects that weren't at the combine, weren't at All-Star games, that tested really well, and heard from scouts saying, "Hey, you need to watch this kid because." That's the type of guy we target with that athleticism. And so a lot of guys to work through and try to figure it out. So we're close, about, you know, a week and a half away. It's just a matter of doing the finishing touches and feeling really confident about the stacks at each position and making sure the right guys are in there. So still got a lot of work to do.
Well, our listeners know once that thing is live, everybody knows that is the go-to source for NFL draft info. Dane, thanks so much for joining us here once again on the Journey of the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand. We've got one of your athletic compatriots here in the next segment. Let's now talk a little Seahawks and what they could be doing, not just at number 5, but throughout the rest of the first round and the rest of the draft as well. It's time now for the Blueprint.
All 32 teams are always under construction. How are they being built? Let's check out the Blueprint.
All right, joining us here this week for the Blueprint covering the Seattle Seahawks for The Athletic, Michael Sean Dugar. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Dugar. Michael Sean, really appreciate you joining us here to talk through the Seahawks. Obviously, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, they've been there for a long time. A lot to chew on here with the way this team approaches the draft.
Yeah, thank you for having me. First off, yeah, this is a rare opportunity for these guys with that much draft capital they have. You know, they've only had one season really in which they have coached their way into a top 10 pick. And that was actually last year with the pick that became Garrett Wilson. And that was only pick 10. So this is really rare for these guys to be having a top 10 pick to start the draft off. It's only the third time in 14 drafts together that Pete Carroll and John have had, you know, a top 10 pick, and they've never picked as high as 5. So yeah, this is definitely uncharted territory kind of for everyone around here.
Yeah, especially for a team, you know, an organization that has been there and established, you know, John Schneider and Pete Carroll have been working together for over a decade at this point. And so I want to ask you first, like the three trends that kind of stand out to you when you look at their more recent draft history, because obviously there's been a lot written, there's been a lot talked about, you know, you go back to like spark scores and all the body type thresholds and everything that goes into the way that they attacked like those Legion of Boom teams. But I'm interested to kind of get your sense of just these last few years, because I know John Schneider has been pretty open about how, you know, they kind of had to change some things up in terms of what they were looking at and how they were picking players. So we can kind of go one by one here, but what's the first thing that stands out to you when you look at the way that they've attacked the draft over these last couple of years?
I think even including going as far back as a decade with John, a willingness to trade back in the first round really stands out, you know, even trading away their first round pick when they anticipate it being a late round, late first round selection. So the Percy Harvin trade, the Jimmy Graham trade, trading back out of the first round in 2017 before taking Malik McDowell. I think they traded back twice. Even when they took Jermaine Ifedi in 2016, he was pick 31, which is the last pick of the draft that year, or last pick of the first round that year. They traded back before doing that, traded back before picking Rashad Penny, 27th. In 2018. So a lot of trading back late in the first round And that's largely because they don't give 32 first round grades. Yep. The Seahawks don't. So I think the max they've probably had in any given year is probably like 18. So you can see why they feel that, okay, once we get in the 20s, we're probably not picking a first round player as is. So let's just stockpile some picks. If we're just, and then if we end up in the second round, so be it. So they've been consistently trying to do that. Even when they took Jordan Brooks in 2020 with the 27th pick, I believe they tried to trade. I think they were initially going to trade Green Bay, who I believe, if I got this right, came up for Jordan Love.
Okay. Yep.
In that draft. So yeah, they've always attempted to trade back in that first round, even in 2011, I believe, as well. So that's like the first one that stands out. If you're building a mock and you just have them standing pat at a pick in the 20s, you know, like, you should at least consider that they'll trade back at that spot.
Yeah, I love that you started there, because that was really a big hallmark for them, especially when you get into like those mid 2010 years. They were always kind of a team that would look to trade back or out completely from round one, always trying to establish some value with that pick. It's like you said, if you've got, you know, 18 first round grades and you're picking 24, you can, it's fair to assume that you're unlikely to get one of those 18. And so, you know, trying to say, okay, well, the difference between the 27th pick and the 35th pick plus what you get from the trade down, you're going to get that value back. So I love that you started with that item. What would be number two on your list?
Kind of piggybacking off of that, you know, a willingness to trade up in the second round.
Love that. Okay. They've
done that a few times, I believe, even in 2020 to draft a defensive end, Darrell Taylor from Tennessee. Yep. I believe they traded up to get him at 48 because they wouldn't have naturally had pick 48. I think their original second round pick that year, because they made the divisional round, was like 59, 58, something like that. And I believe they gave that up and something else to move up to get Darrell Taylor. They traded up to get DK with the last pick of the second round in 2019. And there's been some other examples too. But those two stand out from some of their like last four or five drafts. So they, as much as they trade back in the first round, they've actually shown a willingness to trade up in the second, because the second round is a real valuable round for every team, not just the Seahawks, because they feel like, depending on the position, you could get like a Pro Bowl guy in the second round. Like, that can reasonably be the expectation, depending on the position. Like, even if you take a guard or a center, like, sometimes the first guard or center comes off the board in the second round.
Yep.
You got, you know, last few drafts, or at least in the 2020 draft, I think it was, the first running back came off the board in the second round. So you get some positions where the first one at that spot doesn't even come off until the second round. And if that's the case, then you might be getting the best insert position here player, you know, in the second round. So they've been willing to trade up. I think in the third rounds, they've been willing to trade up as well. I believe they traded up to go get Tyler Lockett as well in the 2015 draft. That's a little older, but you just see a pattern, like, they will go up in the second and even in the third. But yet they'll be more willing to go back when they're in the first round.
And that's the thing, is that when you like trade back, you know, that gives you, it's not just about more picks, but it's also just more flexibility. So if you want to take a boatload of players, then you certainly can do that. Or if you want to move up, if you want to trade for vets, whatever you want to do with those picks, you've got that ability to do so. And you listed a bunch of examples of their willingness to trade up. You know, the Darrell Taylors of the world, DK Metcalf, Cody Barton, they traded up for on day two, Jaron Reed, they traded up for, you mentioned Tyler Lockett. So that's definitely been a prevalent theme when you get to day two of the draft. What would be item number three on your list?
Thank you for that. I knew there was one more. Jaron Reed, yeah, was the other second round guy that they went up against. So yeah, they will trade up. You know, an unwillingness to take cornerbacks very high is one that's always stood out to me, because it kind of runs counter to like the thought process in the draft. With every other team, you know, corner is a premium position, both in free agency and in the draft. And Seattle's never really paid for one in free agency, and they've never drafted one higher than 90th overall, which is when it took Shaquille Griffin in 2017. And so I don't even know what it was prior to that. But that showed, look at that, 90th overall. You know, we're not that far. We're one draft removed from two corners going in the top five last year, you know. But I think last year also serves as a good example of why Pete kind of believes he can kind of do more with less at that position. You know, Sauce won Defensive Rookie of the Year. Look how high he went compared to Tariq Woolen, who was just as good, if not better, and was taken 150 picks later or something like that. You know, so that trend is kind of interesting, because – as much as Seattle's associated with cornerbacks, you get in mock draft mode. I'm like, ooh, I like this guy here, Devon Witherspoon, Christian Gonzalez, Darius Rush, or whoever it is in previous drafts. And you got to sit back and like, dang, these guys ain't taken an outside guy since the third round, you know, in 2017. So, but I'm curious to see what lessons they may have learned, you know, from that. You know, Shaquille is the last, I believe he's the last Pro Bowl defensive player they have drafted, you know, since Bobby Wagner in 2012.
Wow.
So, like, maybe there's a lesson to be learned that if you do take that position high, the ceiling is much higher on that player. Now it's Tariq Woolen. Sorry.
Sure.
But prior to Tariq, it was Shaquille. So that's always stood out to me. I asked Pete about it at the combine. You know, it's just like, dude, why don't you take corners higher? Like, it's so strange. But then you look at last year, you know, Tariq Woolen was a Pro Bowl corner. A fifth round pick, Michael Jackson, who was their other corner, just got who was really good last year, was tendered on a deal for like less than $1 million. So like they have two other corners making less than $1 million. Their rookie corner, Kobe Bryant, Jim Thorpe Award winner at Cincinnati, he's starting at nickel. He's making like $1 million. Like, so they have a really cheap, really decent cornerback room. So maybe that's why. But I can always keep that in mind when I'm mocking corners to Seattle in the draft.
Interesting. Yeah, it's you know, it was a really eye-opening discussion I had on the podcast. This is like 6-7 years ago. Tony Dungy came on, and we were just talking about like just their process, you know, especially moving from Tampa to Indy. And he said one of the first things he and Bill Bolian talked about when he moved to Indianapolis was, look, you know, essentially like this is where we could find value in the draft. You know, for our Tampa 2 scheme, like we don't need to play to everyone wants like height, weight, speed at corner. Well, I had Rondae Barber at Tampa, a future Hall of Famer, who, you know, was the opposite of height, weight, speed. Like, we can get those guys later. We can get a small undersized Will linebacker. We can draft Cato June in the sixth round and be okay. Let's spend our money on Dwight Freeney. Let's go get offensive playmakers to surround Peyton Manning. So I feel like, you know, with Pete Carroll, you know, that must be something they look at and say, okay, look, we can, for whatever reason, like we can coach around the cornerback position. We can coach up the cornerback position. Let's spend our resources elsewhere. And I feel like every team, you want to try and find that value somewhere on the depth chart.
Yeah, no, and for them, the issue has been trying to do that up front and it not been working.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of coaches will tell you, and Pete Carroll kind of talked a little bit about this offseason, like, hey, we just got to get better players up front. You know, that just kind of is what it is. It's hard to scheme around up front. Yep. Like, you know, so much of football is being able to take on a block and get off a block on defense in particular. So you can't really scheme around that. You can't get off a block, then your team's going to stink. Up front, and if your team stinks up front, it's hard to mask that and have a competent defense. So yeah, they've been able to successfully kind of find value at cornerback, and then trade for safeties with like Quandre Diggs and right. Jamal Adams, and then up front though, that's why they're so happy to get this fifth pick. It's like, all right, maybe we can finally get our Nick Bosa. Let's get our Quinnen Williams. Let's get our Aaron Donald. You know, some of these guys who are just game wreckers up front that have gone with top 10 picks that they just haven't been able to feasibly grab.
So let's transition into that. What do you feel? Obviously, defensive front, you know, and they did address it a little bit here with Draymond Jones coming over from Denver. But what are the three biggest needs for this team right now as we sit here in late March?
Interior defensive line is atop the list, just for the reasons I just talked about. Like, they've just been getting their butts whooped by really good linemen up front. Not necessarily always the interior, because there's like a Nick Bosa, for example. But they just played in a division. They still play in a division that in the last like couple years has had J.J. Watt. It's obviously had Aaron Donald. Like I said, it's had Bosa, Eric Armstead. Like, they just – teams with these nasty front lines. You know, I remember Pete Carroll has brought up Washington a couple of times because they've played them. They played them in 2021 and 2020. Just look at Washington's D-lines. They just had a bunch of high picks, you know, with Sweat and Payne and Chase Young. And, you know, Pete Carroll makes the points like, you got to stink to get those type of guys consistently. And just we haven't stunk. And even now they didn't stink in 2021 or 2022. So now they have that top five pick. So I would say that's atop the list. I think interior offensive line is also atop the list. They basically just got to build from within, you know, from the middle. I know we think of other premium positions like corner, receiver, offensive tackle, quarterback. But if you look at Seattle, they're doing all right. there. I think they could use another corner, but like we just talked about, I think that's unrealistic with their high picks. So they're good at receiver. They got two rookie tackles. They just paid Geno. So I think the biggest need is interior defensive line, probably followed by interior offensive line. They have Evan Brown at center now. Yep. They re-signed Phil Haynes on a $4 million deal. They still have left guard Damian Lewis making like $2 or $3 million this year on the final year of his rookie deal. But all of those guys are on expiring contracts that I just mentioned. And so when you're talking about some of these positions, you're looking for towards the future. It's not always, all right, we have a guy, so we can't take this. Like, okay, well, how long is that guy in the contract? How much guaranteed money is left under his deal? You know, Evan, Phil, and Damian are all on expiring deals, you know, so you got to think for the future at that spot. And then the third one is inside linebacker. Mm-hmm. They are just thin. They are thin there. You got Jordan Brooks coming off a torn ACL in week 17, so who knows when he'll be ready for next season. They let Cody Barton, their weak side linebacker from last year, go to the Commanders from $3.5 million. There's mutual interest with bringing back a guy like Bobby Wagner, but obviously they went with Devin Bush instead of him, at least for right now. But even Devin's deal, from what I heard, is pretty modest. Yep. And Devin's play kind of has fallen off from that promising rookie year he had in 2019. So they don't even have bodies at inside linebacker. So all three of those spots are really, really urgent needs.
How do you view this organization when it comes to like need versus best player available? Do you think they're going to try and shoehorn in anything, especially at that number five pick? Or do you feel like they'll trend more towards BPA?
Yeah, I think when you talk best player available versus need, they're not mutually exclusive all the time.
Yep.
Actually, very rarely are they mutually exclusive. It's more like I try to read the sentence like this: best player available at a position of need. Like I kind of view it
yep,
that way.
Sure.
But they haven't always viewed it that way. For example, the example I like to use is ahead of the 2019 draft, they traded Frank Clark to the Chiefs for a haul, and the Chiefs paid him. But that left Seattle without a talented edge rusher. Frank was coming off having 13.5 sacks that season. And so what did they do in the draft? When they got picked 29, they took an edge rusher in LJ Collier. I doubt LJ was the highest rated player on their board at pick 29, but you can just feel that they felt like they had to take an edge rusher because they didn't have Frank. And with one of those situations where they took need versus best player available, I don't know what their board looked like at the time, but I imagine they probably had DK rated higher at the time. He's in that same draft. So I think because of a lesson like that, they've probably learned from it and are more likely to just go with the best player available and make it work. That said, it gets really tricky at pick five. Yep. Because of the history we've talked about before. Like, if Anthony Richardson is the best player available at five, do they take him? What about Christian Gonzalez, the corner from Oregon, and everything we just talked about with cornerbacks? You know, what if it's the tackle from Northwestern? Like, when would he see the field if yep. you've got Abe Lucas and Charles Cross, who played most of the year? Charles missed three snaps all of last year, and there were three kneel downs. So that shows you that Charles is not coming off the field. Abe only came off the field for, I think it was an ankle or knee injury. So guys just aren't coming off the field at tackle. So if it's the guy from Northwestern, do you take him? You know, what if it's the receiver from TCU? What if it's Jordan Addison? You're kind of good at receiver, but would you take one in the top 10 if he's the highest rated guy on your board? What if it's Brian Branch? You're already paying $40 million for safeties, but, you know, what if he's the highest rated guy on your board? So I think it gets kind of fascinating at the top, in particular when you talk about BPA versus need. Later on in the draft, I do think you'll see they'll be willing to draft just whoever the best player is, whether that is a tackle, yep. a center, a guard, or whatever. But, yeah, I don't think to what you said, I don't think they'll shoehorn like a center, you know, with their top five pick just because – you know, Evan Brown's on expiring deal. You know, that's where the best player available / at a position of need becomes the better way to view it.
Are there any different programs, you know, collegially that you feel like this organization has really special connections to that would just be important to kind of take into account when you're putting together a mock draft?
It's always start with USC yep. in that regard, but then branch out to where some USC coaches have gone.
Right.
Like I remember when Ed O was at LSU. Pete would lean. They took a few LSU guys, like for 2020 draft. I believe they took tight end Stephon Sullivan and Damian Lewis yep. Off that LSU team that won the Natty. And I remember Pete Carroll kind of mentioned, like, oh, yeah, you know, I can talk to Ed O about some of these guys. Same thing with wherever Lane Kiffin is at this point, Ole Miss, I think. So if wherever Kiffin is, any Kiffin, honestly. So, yeah, wherever you got a Kiffin, whatever, wherever Ed O goes, anyone who has got ties to USC, it doesn't have to be necessarily a guy who's there now, although they've picked up some dudes there, Chinna Nwosu, who they got last year. And for agency, he's a USC guy, drafted Rasheem Green out of USC in 2018. I'm very surprised they did not take Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, they had a need at slot receiver. He was there. He's a USC guy. I don't know why they didn't. I do know why, but I was very surprised that they did not take him. So USC is the place to start for these guys. And but then it branches out. I think Alabama, too, when you're talking DBs, because of they have Carl Scott as their DB coach. And Carl used to work there pretty recently, I think. Like, as recently as 2020, yeah, I believe. Right, yep. So, yeah, so that's another place to go, too, if you're looking for guys there. I would say anybody who's – I don't think Charlie Strong's coaching in college right now, but guys who have worked with him can be ties too as well, because Clint Hurt, Seattle defensive coordinator, used to work for Charlie at Louisville. And so Clint's got some college background as well. Like, for example, that's kind of how they end up getting Puna Ford. He wasn't a draft pick in 2018, but Clint recruited Puna to Louisville. And then Puna ended up following Clint, ended up following Charlie to Texas. But Clint kept his eye on him. So it's like stories like that. So anybody who's connected to Charlie Strong and maybe that he's coached recently or in the past in college or tried to recruit, that's probably one as well. And then, like I said, anyone off the USC tree.
Charlie Strong was at Miami last year, and he and that's where Hightower is too. That's another good connection there for them in terms of the U. But he actually just left, and now he's at Alabama. So there's another Alabama connection there for you for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, and I think Clint Hurt is a Miami grad, I want to say, too. So I think that's another school you can kind of pencil in there. I don't think Clint worked there, but like if there's coaches there that he knows, I imagine and he's familiar with the area, too. So guys who come from that area, I remember mentioning that last year when they signed Artie Burns as a free agent corner. Clint was like, yeah, man, I tried to recruit Artie in high school. I've known him forever. So, like, that, you know, Clint Hurt's ties, too, in his background are be very important for the draft. He has a lot more power than he's had in previous drafts.
Interesting. I like that. All right. So, with all this being said, is there a guy or two that's being mocked to the Seahawks right now that you think just makes a lot of sense? You know, maybe, one for that first pick, one for that second pick later in round one?
There's a couple. I mean, Jalen Carter makes a ton of sense. Yep. Legal issues notwithstanding, I mean, they've taken the position they've willing to give the benefit of the doubt most with guys who have off-field concerns. And I'll just blanket off-field concerns. Sure, sure. I'll include like work ethic stuff in there too. I know that's on-field, but you know what I mean? Like you look at Frank Clark, and what he was accused of coming into the draft in a post Ray Rice world. And he was their top pick that year. They were going to re-sign Frank too, so like they were invested in him. I mean, even look at Jaren Reed, too, not coming into the draft, but like what he was accused of and what got him suspended in 2019, got him six games for a DV case. And he wasn't charged, but like they re-signed Jay Reed after that. And you got Bruce Irvin coming out, who was their top pick, just Google Bruce Irvin, West Virginia, and you'll find a bunch of stuff on Bruce that don't have nothing to do with football. And then Malik McDowell coming out of Michigan State, and that he's had more legal issues since, right? He had legal issues since being drafted, but before it was just kind of rumors like, this is a top 10 talent who's falling for a reason. And Seattle was like, cool, we'll still take him. So I use all those examples to say that Seattle, if they're going to give benefit of the doubt to a player because of his talent, the defensive line is typically where they've done that more than any other position. So I think Jalen Carter makes a ton of sense. In that regard, is one of their top picks. Anthony Richardson actually does too, particularly if you're one of the people who just wants Anthony to just sit for a year. I don't, but if that's like the route you prefer for him, he would make sense with these weapons, this O-line. You know, Anthony's probably not in position to just come in and lead like a bad offense to the promised land. You know, like even Trevor Lawrence just showed us how hard that is for a young guy, same with Kyler Murray. But if you put Anthony in a good situation, like team with a good O-line, good weapons, like and a good play caller, good head coach, he could probably succeed. those two have stood out to me at the top, and the third one would probably be Will Anderson Jr. from Bama. Like, if by some, you know, grace of the football gods, four quarterbacks go in the first four picks, then Seattle would turn that card in for Will Anderson Jr., I think, as fast as humanly possible, if I break a record for how fast you can turn the card in if Will Anderson's there. So those are probably the guys at the top that make a lot of sense. I think when you get to around pick 20, again, they would probably trade back for reasons we talked about earlier. But one name that keeps standing out to me is Osiris Torrance from Florida, man. Like, that dude just looks like he's ready to be a starting guard at either spot, left or right, just like tomorrow. You just plop him in, give him the playbook, put him next to a veteran center, you know, would be nice, and then just let him rock. You know, I love him for that pick. For that reason, he would just, I think he's an upgrade too over the guys they have at the guard spots. I just think he'd be ready to go right away. When I was watching the Senior Bowl and I got home and I looked at all my notes, I forget what jersey number he was wearing, but I was like, whoever, I think 56 maybe, like 56 is like the best dude here. That was like my conclusion. And he's one of the guys who, he probably, of the Senior Bowl guys, he might be the highest one picked maybe, because he was just nails to me. So he stands out. If Jackson Smith and Jigba from Ohio State is there at 20, oh man, I'm turning that in. I don't know how often he's been mocked there, other than I think I did it once, and Dane Brugler, my colleague at The Athletic, has done it, I think, a couple times. And shout out to Dane, man, because I'm on board with that. I think Jackson's going to be the best receiver in the draft class. I don't even think it's going to be particularly close by the time like all of these guys' rookie deals are up. So I would run and turn that card in. If I was them as well. And probably my third one, there would be I've seen this maybe only once or twice from mock drafts, is Drew Sanders. The linebacker from Arkansas. Yeah, like, I can see that. Like we talked about with the inside linebacker. Like Drew kind of fits what they need. So, yeah, those would be guys in the later part. Even if they trade back before getting those guys, I like all of them. I do think if you're at 20 and you trade back and think you're still going to get Smith and Jigma, you're probably not. But I still think you could trade back and probably get Osiris and Drew.
Can I throw an Osiris Torrance nugget at you? So you mentioned earlier the USC guys, and you know, all you always keep in touch with those guys. Kiri Colbert is the wide receiver coach at Florida, and he played for I'm pretty sure he played for Pete Carroll at USC. If not, he like just missed him. But coached at USC for a long, long time. So there's your tie in there in terms of the Florida Gators with Osiris Torrance. And also Drew Sanders, he was at Alabama in 20 when Dunbar was there. So there's another tie-in for you. A lot of these, I think, make a lot of sense. I love that. Real quickly, because there's a bunch I want to follow up with you on there. Is there anybody that's being mocked to Seattle that you're just like, yeah, I just don't see it based off their history?
Yeah, any corners in the top 10, that's I've seen a couple. That's probably not realistic for all the reasons. We've talked about there. Who's the tackle from Ohio State?
The Dewan Jones. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that I've seen him mocked there later, like in that first round. Yeah. I'm just not seeing it with that pick. He would be a very interesting discussion for best player available versus need. Cause like Abe Lucas was really good.
Yeah.
Like Abe Lucas is a starting caliber tackle.
You just took him in the second round. He played every game for you. Like you said, like that's tough to move on from.
Yeah, and he was good too. Like you look at some of the reps he's had, and he had some battles there. Because when you're the right tackle, they stick the Max Crosbys of the world over there on you and tell you to be blessed, you know, and leave you on an island, and it can be tough. And you know, so he had Bosa three times last year, and Max Crosby, and I'm missing a really good edge rusher that was also on the schedule. Boom. I think they played Brian Burns. So like he had some battles there, and you just look at the tape of those games in particular. I think Abe showed that he can handle himself. He didn't win every rep, right? No tackle does. But for a rookie, you watch the tape and you wouldn't be like, oh, number 72, boy, oof, he don't got it. No, you would just watch him and say he can handle himself. So I think the tackle from Ohio State that's kind of getting some buzz out here as well. I just don't see it that early. As fun as it would be to have like a right tackle battle, I guess, in camp, and have two really good guys there. The reality is just sliding one guy to guard or benching the other guy, it just seems like a poor use of resources for a team that has short-term aspirations of winning the championship now.
So just based off those names that you named earlier in terms of the guys you could see, let me paint this situation for you. I want to cut you loose. You've been very generous with your time. So let's say the first four picks go off the board and Seattle is staring in the face, Anthony Richardson or Jalen Carter? As we sit here, Monday, March 20th, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Plenty to change here in the next month. But how would you envision that discussion going in Seattle's draft room?
I think it would kind of be like almost like the final scene in the Avengers Civil War movie. just a big slugfest to the death in like an airport hangar. Because it's a battle of long-term versus short-term. That's really what it comes down to, you know, and I'm not saying that this is the case in Seattle's building right now, but generally speaking, coaches are usually thinking a bit more short-term, right? Because their job is on the line. One bad season can cost you your gig. Whereas if you're a front office, you're looking at your caps, the health of your salary cap down the line. You're looking at the roster in totality. Like I mentioned, guys are on four-year deals, on rookie deals. So you want to think down the road with some of these picks. Anthony Richardson is a long-term pick. And even Pete Carroll has said that at the combine. He didn't say it specifically about Anthony. He just said about the quarterback position in general. That's a long-term pick. It could be a very great long-term pick, but it is undoubtedly a long-term decision. Jalen helps you in the short term and the long term, assuming he doesn't do anything that's like conduct detrimental to the team, gets himself suspended or something. So that's the battle there. Long term versus short term, essentially. Front offices are usually more forward thinking. Coaches are like, give me a guy I can work with right now who's reliable, knows the plays, is going to make an impact. You know, it's not to say that front offices don't want immediate impact players, but they also have to be a bit more forward thinking just by the nature of their job. So I think that would be the battle there. You get the coaching staff like, yo, give us a guy, versus the front office like, yo, but down the road, this is our dude. And I think ultimately when you have a head coach who has a final say over the roster in Pete Carroll, I think they'll probably end up, if it came down to those two, going with Jalen.
Michael Shaw, my last question for you. Just the final parting advice for anybody that's making a mock draft, you're picking for the Seahawks throughout round one. What's the parting words there?
I think if it comes down, if you're making a mock and you're debating between two players and one of them was at the Senior Bowl, just go with the guy who was at the Senior Bowl. That's kind of another, that would be like the fourth one, the answer to your the very first question we started with on like their trends. They love Senior Bowl guys. I think they took like five guys from the Senior Bowl last year. And several of their top picks have been Senior Bowl guys, Rashad Penny, LJ Collier, and some other ones too. So yeah, if you're debating, like, should I go with this guy? If one of them played in the Senior Bowl, go with the guy who played in the Senior Bowl.
Jim Nagy coming over to do the Senior Bowl from the Seattle Seahawks. Yep. So plenty of inroads there. Michael Shaw, this has been awesome. Everybody make sure you go follow Mike at Mike Dugar on Twitter. His Seahawks Man-to-Man podcast. Certainly, if you want to learn more about Seattle, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, that entire organization, make sure you subscribe. I know a recent episode, you just had friend of the show, Deontay Lee, on to chop it up. So, Michael Shaw, thanks so much for joining us once again here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by Life Brand.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
Just outstanding stuff there from Michael Shaw, just covering the Seattle Seahawks team from A to Z. Now let's get to one final question here in our draft mailbag segment. Let's go to Dr. Johnny O, left a 5-star review saying, great content week after week. Do you think Joe Tippmann, the offensive lineman from Wisconsin, could bring position versatility to NFL teams? He appears to have the size and athleticism of a tackle. His arm length may be a question. So, Johnny, that is a good question. I do like Joe Tippmann. I think when you look at him, he's an underclassman coming from Wisconsin. There's a lot to like about his profile. He's a bigger kid at 6'6", 313 pounds. You mentioned the arm length. It's just about 32 and a half. That's going to be beneath a lot of thresholds that teams have in terms of playing tackle. But I think when you look at his guard center versatility, I mean, this is a guy that's played really only center over the course of his career, minimal experience at guard, but he does have the size to be able to play at either guard spot. So I think when you look at Joe Tippmann, he presents versatility, just not like tackle versatility. I think that he's got the ability to be a swing guy on the interior, unless you view him as a starter, which I do think he's got starting traits, Joe Tippmann from Wisconsin. So Johnny O, appreciate the question. Appreciate the 5-star review. Great stuff today from Dane Brugler and Michael Shaw Dugar, both from The Athletic. Just outstanding stuff as always. We'll be back later this week on the Journey of the Draft podcast presented by Life Brand.